The Greymoor Friars Monastery is located on Atonement Mountain near Garrison, New York. Adjacent to this famous monastery, one sees St. Christopher's Inn. Homeless men from all walks of life come to this famous inn. These men are fed and sheltered by the Greymoor Friars, and no distinction is ever made of race, creed, or color. Invited to listen to another chapter of the dramatized story, The Life of Christ, brought to you transcribed each week by the Greymoor Friars, who offer this series with a prayerful hope that this vivid portrayal of the life of Christ will help to awaken in you a deeper personal love of God and a firm determination to strive to prove that love in your daily life. Now, Chapter 19, The Pharisees and Unwashed Hands.
Forasmuch as this people drew near me with their mouth, and with their lips glorify me, but their heart is far from me, and they have feared me with the commandments and doctrines of men. Therefore, behold, I will proceed to cause an admiration in this people by a great and wonderful miracle. For wisdom shall perish from their wise men, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hid.
Leaders among the Pharisees and Sadducees received the news of the death of John the Baptist with relief and satisfaction. Now their concern was with Jesus, for the reports about him were most disturbing.
Abner, I've just come from Galilee. It is said Jesus fed 5,000 people with a few loaves and fishes, that they tried to make him king.
Scribe, you are late. I know all these things. I have myself come from Capernaum, where I saw many turn their backs on him when he defined what was the bread of life.
Yes, I heard of it. I did not witness it myself. I was busy elsewhere. I sought out some of the followers of John the Baptist and talked with them.
Yes? What will they do now that John is dead?
They will turn to Jesus, for many of them feel that he is the one for whom John was the messenger.
So they're determined to have their Messiah, and if one dies, they seek another.
So it seems. John's fate has in no way halted Jesus. On the contrary,
it has intensified his efforts.
Yes.
Tell me this, scribe. Did not the Pharisees arrange things so that Antipas could seize John?
We have no love for Antipas. He has defied our laws. He has scorned our precepts. But
you find him useful nonetheless. Oh, come, come. You don't have to play cat and mouse with me.
What do you have in mind, Abner?
Antipas could be persuaded to arrest Jesus, as he did John.
Perhaps.
Jesus is a greater threat to Antipas than was John. His chief reason for arresting John was because he was plain-spoken about his marriage. Does he not know that the people clamor to make Jesus their king?
Yes, I see.
Then I suggest you go at once to Machaerus. Tell these things to Antipas. Once he understands that Jesus can cause far more trouble than John, he will act.
I shall see to it that he does understand. I shall leave at once.
And leave. leaving Abner, the scribe hurried to Machaerus. But Antipas had already heard much about Jesus from his spies and informers, and he was greatly troubled in his mind because of him.
This is John the Baptist. He is risen from the dead. And that is why miraculous powers are working through him. This is John. Come back to torment me.
Herod! Herod! Herod, why are you wandering around? Why don't you come to bed?
If I lie down, there will be dreams. And I'll see things. But if I walk and stay awake, I fight off the thoughts with other things.
What things are you talking about?
Those that come forcing themselves into my mind, or those I think of myself to keep the others out?
What difference does it make? Why don't you lie abed at night?
My best device, Herodias, to keep out unwelcome thoughts is to dwell upon the evil trick you played upon me. Sending deceit in your own flesh to play upon the excitement of the crowd and to trap me in a promise.
Oh, stop it. Come to bed.
I'm not sleepy. Why aren't you asleep, Herodias?
How can I sleep with you wandering about?
Such tender concern you've never shown before.
Wandering about, Herod, and babbling like one not sound in the head. Even the servants are talking.
Yes. Yes, no doubt.
Wine, at this hour.
Yes, wine, and more wine. Ah, better join me, Herodias.
No, thank you.
You don't feel the need of it?
Why do you ask that?
It dulls the senses if one drinks enough.
I've no wish to drink.
How can one drink enough? There's always the awakening after. The sensation reasserting itself to bestir the mind and make it remember the reason for the drinking. And then it all begins again. There's no escape in wine or anything.
Oh, you're talking foolishly. You're drunk. Now come to bed.
Get out. Get to bed if you wish. I give you my dreams. Get out and leave me alone!
You're in no condition to be left alone. Herod, I'd hoped the banquet, with the great impression made on all, would have shaken you out of your gloom. Now I find you're worse than ever. Herod, I want to know, is this to be our life from now on?
No. Don't ask me what the future is going to be. For like a vine, it takes roots in the past and the present. Yesterday and today is the future. And all tomorrows are the same. They are the today and yesterdays, repeating themselves like...
Oh, stop it, Herod. Poetic figures of speech are out of tune in a fat man. Now, come on, let's have it out and then forget about it.
You don't know...
I can easily guess.
It's not on your mind, too?
No. Except that you're in a worse mood than before. The recent banquet was a success, thanks to Salome's dancing.
Success? For whom? You?
I gained my chief desire. Now, why can't you forget the incident, Herod?
How like the trickster who readily forgets the prank. But let me tell you this. He who is the butt of the prank never forgets. I heard you laugh that night, Herodias, at a dead man's head. That night I looked on evil unadorned, and the starkness of it revealed me as one who was more weak than evil. Nonetheless, I hated myself. I, whose weakness had acted as agent for your evil, Oh, yes, Herodias, you are evil. And I am weak. But between us, we overcame the righteous prophet.
Oh, stop babbling like a remorseful child.
Very well. And from this moment, let there be silence between us on this topic. Forget it if you wish or if you can. Now, get out. Let remorse, the unwanted child of evil, come to me.
Oh, very well. But let me remind you the dawn is breaking.
No. No, not yet.
Look for yourself.
So soon. Herodias, tomorrow always comes so soon.
Scribe, you'll find Herod's changed. He's not well.
What? We've heard that he was in fine fettle the night of the banquet, made a very good impression on all those petty chiefs. They were dumbfounded when he offered to give your daughter half a kingdom for her performance.
Let me warn you. Don't mention the name of Johnny. He's expecting you, but I said nothing about why you're calling. Just that a man from Jerusalem wishes to see him. Herod?
Here. By the window. Ah. You're the man from Jerusalem.
Yes, Herod. I've just come from the city.
Are you a spy for Pilate?
Of course not. The high priest sent me.
Why?
Information has reached us about Jesus, which is of vital concern to you.
Jesus? Who is this man? I don't...
Of course you've heard of him. The man who, it is said, works miracles and cures people.
Yes, yes.
Whereas once he worked somewhat quietly and tried to conceal his works, now he's working openly, defiantly. But a few days ago, he put on a demonstration for 5,000 people.
What did he do?
Using some magic, he made it appear that he took a few loaves of bread and a few fishes and fed the entire multitude.
Tell me more about this man.
He goes about claiming to cure people of all manner of sickness. He violates the Sabbath.
Not care I for your petty rules about the Sabbath. The man cures. He does great works.
But Herod, are you aware of what this crowd of 5,000 wanted to do? They shouted that this man was the prophet and the king. And on the spot they wanted to make him king. Herod, did you hear? They wanted to make him king. He pays no attention.
I see it. I see it all. This is John the Baptist, the man I beheaded. He's risen from the dead.
Oh, nonsense, Herod. For over a year we've been hearing fantastic rumors about this Jesus.
Herod, you arranged matters very cleverly in the case of John. Perhaps you could do the same in regard to Jesus.
Yes, yes, this is John, risen from the dead. And these mighty works show forth themselves.
Herod, you can't be serious.
I tell you, this is John. Come back to torment me.
But this is Jesus, born in Nazareth, the son of a carpenter.
It is John, risen from the dead. I know it's John. Herodias, I must go and see him. Once I see him, I'll know for sure.
Come, you see how he is.
Yes. The beheading of John has preyed on his mind.
The fools, John. They come to me and want me to put you to death again. The blind fools. They say you're dead, and then they say put him to death. Learned hypocrite of a scribe, tell me, how do you murder a dead man?
Abner, I've just come from Machaerus. Herod's afraid of his shadow. He'll be of no help to us.
No, never mind. Conditions have changed in Capernaum.
In what respect?
The respectable people, the educated and intelligent, seem to have cooled considerably since we were last here. He's lost many, especially from among the better classes. Though plenty of the rabble still cling to him. But he's definitely lost ground.
What's caused it?
That doctrine he preached right after that business with the 5,000. He invited them to partake of his flesh and his blood. Many were scandalized and left the synagogue. In the end, only the usual 12 remained with him. Now we can shift our attack.
What is your plan?
Now we call attention to Jesus' disregard for the formalities. We appeal to class distinctions. We separate the wealthy and the cultured from the poor and the boorish. And make the upper classes aware of the fact they're being led around by a carpenter with his cohort of fishermen, publicans, and whatnots. All the little things they've overlooked in their excitement over miracles, we now drag up for their attention.
Fine. But with what do we begin?
With unclean hands.
Did you say unclean hands?
I did. Come, the meal hour's at hand. Jesus and his disciples will be at the table. I'll show you what I mean.
Abner, why are all these people here?
Oh, it's always like this when Jesus is in the city.
But do they stand around like this and watch them while they eat?
Always. You never know when some morsel of wisdom might fall from the lips of their rabbi. Come on, let's work our way to the window. Make way, make way.
Just in time. They're starting to eat.
So I see. They all have healthy appetites. But, friend, did you notice how thoroughly they washed their hands before partaking of the bread?
Why, no, Abner, I didn't notice, but I came late. No doubt they purified themselves and the pots and pans most thoroughly.
Rabbi! Rabbi, why do thy disciples transgress the tradition of the ancients? For they do not wash their hands when they take food.
Is it not written that when a man come from the market, he first washes hands? Is it not written that pots and pans and brazen vessels be purified with water?
And is it not written...
Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrine the precepts of men. For letting go the commandments of God, you hold fast the traditions of men, the washing of pots and of cups, and many other things you do like these.
You slander us. We walk in the tradition. We observe the Sabbath.
Do you say it's wrong to wash our hands when we eat?
Well, do you nullify the commandment of God, that you may keep your own tradition?
Not so, Rabbi.
A lie.
For God has said, honor thy father and thy mother, and let him who curses father or mother be put to death.
Very true, Rabbi. The law of Moses.
But you say, let a man say to his father or his mother, any support thou mightst have had from me is dedicated to God. If the son does this, then he is freed from his obligation of supporting his parents, and still returns the property for himself. He does not then honor his father and mother.
That is Corban, a gift to God which cannot be put to any other use.
So you have made void the commandment of God by your tradition. Hear me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside a man that entering into him can defile him. But the things that come out of a man, these are what defile a man. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear.
He's right. No! No, we eat, we live, we die by tradition. We are hampered by petty rules.
Well, Abner, what do you think?
On the whole, the effect will be to our advantage. And to be sure, we were in an awkward position in regard to honoring father and mother.
I sat in on a case only the other day where a mother brought action against her child for support. He declared the money that could have been given to his mother was earmarked for God. What could I do?
Nothing. The man will give nothing to God or to his mother. But Jesus himself pulled us out of that hole by his declaration that nothing that a man eats can defile him. That will ruin him among many of the traders and merchants, the buyers and sellers of meat and fish.
Then you are satisfied with the debate, if one can call it that?
Yes, on two counts. First, as I say, his outburst just now. Heretofore, he's been content to reply in regard to principle or doctrine. But now he attacks the daily living habits of the people. He tells them they can eat anything they wish, that washing of hands is not necessary. No, I'll willingly trade him the point he made against us for the damage he did to himself.
You spoke of being satisfied on two counts, Abner.
Second is the man himself, the change in manner. There was a time when he would take our probing mildly, almost in good humor. But now he leaps to the attack. There's a sharper ring to his voice. I have an uneasy feeling about, as of a man who already knows his fate and is impatient to meet it.
Well, this is my first meeting with a man. I wouldn't know that.
It's time. It seems to be more precious with him than before. Ah, I have it.
Yes?
I'd say this change took place right after the death of John the Baptist.
And while the Pharisees and many of the crowd withdrew to ponder at what Jesus had said, he returned to his disciples, and there was murmur among them.
The Pharisees have taken offense. They retired in anger. They'll make trouble for us.
What's the meaning of this parable?
Every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be rooted up. Let them alone. Blind guides they are of blind men. But if a blind man guide a blind man, both fall into a pit.
But the parable! Explain to us the parable!
Are you also even yet without understanding? Do you not realize that whatever enters the mouth passes into the belly and is cast out into the drain? But the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and it is they that defile a man. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, immorality, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are things that defile a man. But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man.
Forasmuch as this people draw near me with their mouth, and with their lips glorify me, but their heart is far from me, and they have feared me with commandments and doctrines of men. Therefore, behold, I will proceed to cause an admiration in this people by a great and wonderful miracle. For wisdom shall perish from their wise men, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hid.